Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the program today, we start a two-program look at the Nevada system of higher education. We start out with former Regent William Cobb. Plus, on the Power Pundit panel today, Robert Eidhoven, Leslie Pittman, Steve Mulvenin, and Allison Galder. It's all coming up next on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, the world's largest industrial park, the resort at Red Hawk, the Whittemore Peterson Institute, where today's discoveries are tomorrow's cure, and the Las Vegas Review-Journal and ReviewJournal.com.
Hello, I'm Lance Gilman. Welcome to the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center. Prosperity for Nevada. We are TRI.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
When it comes to state-of-the-art energy, Nevada is the right state to be in. A reliable, efficient network. Cleaner energy resources, like solar, wind, and geothermal. And technology that will help you save energy and money at home. NVEnergy.com.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shad, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we are pleased to welcome back to the program William Cobb, former regent with the Nevada System of Higher Education, going on to be a U.S. magistrate. Pleasure to have you back on the program, sir. You served 4 years out of a six-year term. I want to start out by asking you, what were your expectations going in? What did you expect to find on the board, and what was the reality?
Well, my expectations were quickly overwhelmed by the volume of information that comes at you and what you have to do to learn to be a good regent. But my expectation was that I would hope in some small measure to contribute to the improvement of higher education. And I happened to come into office about the time of the recession, the declining budgets, and it was turned out to be a very difficult 3-4 year time period.
What did you think about the functionality of the board?
I had heard of the board's problems, and you know, during Jill Derby's last campaign, a lot of criticisms about being the most dysfunctional board in the world, but I actually found there's a good rapport among all board members. I was fortunate to come in with Michael Wixom as chair, who I think the world of. I thought the board was unified, and I think we looked at the statewide picture of it being the Nevada system of higher education and not just any local area that you happen to represent. And I think they were united for the common good of higher education in Nevada, and I was very fortunate to serve with a board that for the most part had very large congeniality among the members.
With the legislative session, obviously it was very tough going in, looking at massive cuts to the system. What actually ended up happening?
Well, actually, if you go back to 2009, which might be considered a high watermark for higher education, the budgets have been cut, I think, a total of $210 million over that time period. Tuition has been increased about 50%, or I should say fees. Keep in mind, under the legislature, under the laws of the state of Nevada, the board cannot charge residents of Nevada tuition. So we get around this by charging fees, and then the same fees are paid by out-of-state students. We've lost about, I think, 1,100 positions in higher education since 2009. This year, the cuts, I believe, totaled $80 million, offset somewhat by another tuition increase, causing elimination of a lot of programs, majors, classes throughout higher education.
Let me ask you this. Out of those jobs lost and those funds lost, how much was jobs that were unfilled at the time versus, you know, actual people losing their jobs?
Well, you know, I don't have those exact statistics, and your guest tomorrow, Chancellor Klage, would be better able to answer that question. But I would say maybe 60 to 70% of the positions, maybe not even that high, were those that were not filled. And nevertheless, it was a position that was necessary to fulfill the mission of higher education, so you don't have that person on campus any longer. But actual loss of positions, more so probably at UNR than any other institution. As you know, they went through the curricular review process and eliminated a lot of majors, positions, tenured professors. But generally, I would say, Sam, 30 to 40% were actual people who lost their jobs.
Okay, and because that's one of the criticisms that comes about when talking about either government or the university system. When we talk about these massive cuts that are coming, that there are really positions that have been unfilled. And if they've been unfilled for a while, then are we really cutting at that point?
Well, I think you see that not only in higher education, but in private business. I was reading an article that a lot of companies are not hiring because they're expecting their employees to do more than what they did before. UNLV has this...
Is there something wrong with that?
Is there something wrong with that? Stress, burnout, lack of productivity in the long run, perhaps. But let me add this, too, is that... as President Glick said, you know, never waste a good crisis. And there are times when now is the time to come in and do a review. Is this really necessary? Sort of a mini SAGE commission for higher education. And I think there were a lot of things that were unnecessary and not integral to the mission of higher education. So I would agree with you, yes, there were a lot that could be eliminated.
Let me ask you this. What do you think a university education should provide, a state university education should provide for a student?
Well, I think it should be a broad spectrum of knowledge that improves your ability to participate in society. I think the statistics, the interesting statistic is that in 2010, the most popular jobs or the jobs that most people are trying to get into didn't exist in 2000. So there's a huge stream of information technology. It doubles now every 2 years. So the student through the university has to be kept abreast or given the opportunity for this. But it also has to be a broad spectrum. I mean, you just don't want to be a training school. You want to have people taking philosophy. You want to have them taking psychology, languages, become a more rounded individual who is more likely to contribute to society. Because remember, a college graduate is much less likely to be on welfare, commit crime, and more likely to contribute to philanthropic organizations, charities, and so forth.
Can we afford that kind of liberal arts education in an economy of this type?
Sam, can we not afford a liberal arts education like that in this economy? Look what's going on in China. How many universities they're opening every year, if not every day, India. Now, a lot of those are technical educational institutions, and I'm not saying we churn out all philosophy majors. My wife was an accounting major. My son was an engineering major, you know, so in a way that's training. But on the other hand, I was an economics major, and it gave me an ability to go on then to become a lawyer through the law degree that I secured. But yes, I think the answer is we cannot afford it. I mean, those are the people who have the more broad philosophical outlook on life and not a narrow focus.
Okay, let's take a break. More with Bill Kopp when we come back.
To contact Nevada Newsmakers, call 775-857-2244 or go to NevadaNewsmakers.com.
Thanks for your help, Don.
Sure, Mike. How's your construction business going?
It's really growing. How's your business going?
Well, ever since I opened the restaurant, I've been having trouble with my workers' comp program. Who handles your workers' comp?
Well, I use Pro Group Management. They really work with me.
Are they expensive?
Well, I've never had an increase in rates.
Whoa.
I'll get you the number. And thanks again, Don. I couldn't have done this without you.
Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
Press on, Southern Nevada. It's a new beginning. Information the way you need it. We are fighting for you every day to make your life better. The facts. So you can succeed. So you can plan. So you can dream. And always remember, Press on.
And now, back to Nevada Newsmakers with Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Bill Cobb. He was a former regent and is now about to become a U.S. magistrate judge. And I wanted to ask you, you know, when we look at the cost of things, a lot of us in the private sector look at the salaries that are paid for certain positions within the university system and just kind of shake our heads. For example, we just lost the head of the Health Sciences Center, who had been on board for, what, 3-4 years? And was making somewhere in the region of about $450,000 a year. And I'm trying to figure out, what did we end up as a benefit at the end of that, for that kind of money?
Well, you're talking about Dr. Trevison, mm-hmm. who was recruited away to become a chancellor or head of a medical facility in New York at an even higher salary. You have a supply and demand situation that certain people have certain talent and skills that others do not possess. The same it holds true in baseball, supply and demand. Now, Dr. Trevison's salary was not paid, as I understand it, and again tomorrow Chancellor Klaich can explain better, but it was not paid out of state funds. It was private money that was paid for him. You look at the reports about the salaries of the top 20 highly compensated employees in higher education. Almost 90% of those are in the medical school, and about 90% of the salaries of those people in the medical school is paid by their practice plan of earnings that they generate out of the medical school in Las Vegas and Reno. So that's not really taxpayer money going to those. You see a salary for somebody like Chris Ault, another highly compensated individual. Most of his salary comes from non-state money. You get down to the professor who's a tenured professor, and look what that person went to. He or she had a high school, college, master's, PhD, has to continue training, has to continue writing, and their relative salaries in comparison are low versus the private sector for somebody with those kind of skills and talents. Then last, I always find it absolutely amazing when I look at the Chronicle of Higher Education. It's a mini version of New York Times, comes out once a week, rather thick. Half of it is want ads, institutions advertising for professors across the country. And you think right now it's a buyer's market, and it's not. And, you know, we're competing against that, not a market in Reno or Sparks or Las Vegas. We're competing against the country, if not the world.
But go back to my original question, which is what did we accomplish out of that 3 or 4 years worth of that kind of salary?
Well, it was a unique thing that was created with the health sciences system as trying to move to an Oregon-based concept, which is very difficult to do, and perhaps bring all the medical education into one umbrella. Was that accomplished? No. You still have the nursing programs at 3 or 4 institutions. You have the medical school headquartered at UNR, but with a large presence in Las Vegas, where most of the residency and the second or third and fourth year training goes on. We didn't merge all that together, so yes, that didn't work, and that may not be necessarily the goal for the future. But this is a very complicated area. You can't just move the medical school into under the authority of Nevada System of Higher Education, the Chancellor's Office, because they're not accredited. You have to be associated with the accredited institution. You did something like that, the medical school would lose its accreditation, and that would be disastrous for Nevada.
All right, so bottom line is that we really didn't benefit from that experiment at all.
Well, I don't disagree that we didn't benefit at all. I don't know that we accomplished the goals of the health sciences system, but Dr. Trevison was very active in fundraising for the medical school, which, don't forget, is one of the primary job descriptions for every campus president and every dean at the present time, raising
private funds. What did you think about the brouhaha over where the dean of the medical school lives? He wanted to originally live in Reno. There was such a brouhaha from the south that now the university system is going to spend about $400,000 to buy a home, which I would say, if you went back a couple of years ago, would be a $1 million home. Is there a huge north-south fight going on within the university system?
I don't see as there being a fight. What I see is some concerns being raised.
It was pretty ugly.
Well, it was not, a fight involves two, and I don't know that the North was fighting with the South. I think you heard a lot more clamoring in the South about where the position of dean should be. We have a very unique medical school in that it was started as a two-year facility 40 years ago in Reno and matured from there, and much of the clinical program is headquartered in Reno. The third and fourth year training of the medical students and the residencies, and I think 9 out of the 10 residencies are in Las Vegas. Most of the graduate deans are located in Las Vegas. But let me get back to your original question about,
location. 30 seconds, yeah.
Location. During my entire tenure on the House Sciences Committee, never once was it brought up by the then chancellor, your head of the station, that the dean should have to live in Las Vegas as a condition of employment. When Milt Glick and Mark Johnson were searching for a dean for the medical school, not once did anyone impose upon them the condition that the dean had to live in Reno or Las Vegas. Dr. Glick had always left it open to the dean. I think he would have preferred that the dean choose Las Vegas to live in. It would have eliminated a lot of headaches for him. It was never a subterfuge, but it was always open. It was not an element of the contract. Until after that contract it was signed, then certain people raised the requirement the dean should live in Las Vegas. Well, that's closing the barn door after the animals have escaped. And I think that if they give Dr. Schwenk an opportunity, they're going to find that he's a highly qualified, well-motivated individual who is going to be devoting a lot of attention to Las Vegas, including living in that $400,000 house, plus or minus, to conduct what is one of his important functions, as I mentioned earlier, fundraising.
Right, and that's where we have to leave it. We thank you so much for your service on the Board of Regents, and we look forward to your service as U.S. Magistrate Judge. Thank you so much for taking out the time.
Thank you for having me here. I've enjoyed it again.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back on Nevada Newsmakers after this timeout.
All right, Sam, let's check on some commercial buildings, see how their roofs are holding up.
Some business owners can't replace their roofs right now. That's where our free inspections really help out.
Hold on. Let's go inverted. We'll get a closer look.
What do you think?
Well, it certainly can use some preventive maintenance.
Yeah, that would definitely extend the life of this roof.
You ready to check the next one?
Maybe next time we can just take a ladder.
You watch your company bottom line, and I'll cover the top of it.
More and more people in Nevada are choosing Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield for their health coverage. So if you need an individual health plan, what's stopping you from joining?
With kids, I have to be prepared. Do you cover preventive care?
Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield offers a choice of plans, including those with preventive care, to help your family and your budget stay healthy.
I'll bet my personal doctor isn't in your network.
I'll bet he is. And our large network of doctors and hospitals helps you save on the cost of your care, adding more value to your coverage.
I'm self-employed. I need something simple and affordable.
No problem. Our plans are designed for different needs and budgets. Compare plans and apply online 24 hours a day. Or call us to discuss your options. Join all the people who depend on Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield for service and value.
For a free rate quote for you or your family, call 1-866-759-5029 or visit us online at anthem.com/join in.
Why pay more somewhere else? Giant Carpet One is your store for your perfect floor. That's right, the perfect carpet, hardwood, laminate, vinyl, or tile. Whatever it is, Giant Carpet One has your style and your type in stock right now for immediate installation. How perfect is that? Take advantage of our 12-month, no-down, no-interest financing at Giant Carpet One, the one store for your perfect floor.
This segment is brought to you by the Whittemore Peterson Institute, where today's discoveries are tomorrow's cures. This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we have a great Power Pundit panel. As always, Robin Eidhoven is here, the political consultant with J3 Strategies. Leslie Pittman is principal with Sierra Strategies. Steve Mulvinen is principal with Mulvinen Media Relations. Thank goodness we have another strategy there. And Allison Galton is vice president of Planned Parenthood. I wanted to start out with your thoughts on what former Agent Cobb had to say, especially about salaries and what is the role in 2011 of a university system in a country that has this kind of financial crisis.
Yeah, I thought he gave some very thoughtful answers. Difficult time for him to go in. I remember when he was running for regent, and you know, at the same time with, say, County Commissioner John Bredernitz, a lot of these individuals who ran for office for the first time amidst a horrible recession where they don't really get to make grand plans of diversifying the education system, higher ed, and how it affects our community as a whole when the entire time they're looking at budget cuts. But, you know, I think he, along with Wixom and a lot of others, have done their level best to try to make sure that the cuts aren't done in a way that completely devastates the higher ed system. And, you know, there's a lot of conservatives who can look at that higher ed budget and find ways to cut it. And, you know, as difficult as it is, they really haven't had a choice. The increase in fees is problematic. You know, you still want to be able to, you want higher ed to be affordable, but, you know, given the tremendous downturn in the economy, which continues, it's been difficult.
As you look at this as a mother, how do you feel about this?
Well, I thought he brought up some very interesting points that a lot of folks should be mindful of, namely that a number of these positions are paid for through private funds and other outside of taxpayer funds. I think he brought up the challenge associated with a competitive environment in terms of academia between Nevada and other states and around the world. The most interesting thing for me, though, is to kind of watch what's happened in Washington State and California, where you have higher education or state-run higher education facilities increasing the number of out-of-state applications or approvals of new students from out-of-state because the tuition is higher. So it helps them run a more financially sound system. And then reducing the number of in-state kids who are able to attend, who are allowed admission. And I think, you know, there's an interesting dichotomy there because you've got taxpayer funds from the state residents paying for the higher education system but are being kind of shut out of the system because out of state students are paying higher tuition and that's more attractive to the university system.
Steve, you were very much involved for most of your career with K through 12 in Washoe County. You know, it was interesting when Milt Glick unfortunately passed away, they promoted the provost. They promoted someone who was already here, who already had some commitment to the community. How do you feel about this versus people who are here for two or three years, get paid huge amounts of money, and even then, they're gone?
Well, I think, you know, oftentimes it's the same in higher as it is in K-12. You know, the system goes along for a while. Things begin to change, and those that are calling the shots, you know, either the school board or the board of regents decide they want to make a change. You know, I think you can make an argument either way that promoting from within promotes loyalty and consistency and maintaining the course. But on the other hand, if you decide that the organization needs to take a change in a different direction, I think it's oftentimes smart to bring in somebody from the outside and upset the apple cart. I think that's what the school board here did when they hired Heath Morrison, and I think it's paying for some results.
Your thoughts, Allison?
Well, I think there's value in the connections to the community, too, when you have somebody who already lives here and is from here, because a lot of the deans and a lot of these high salaries are from fundraising, and not everybody can do it, and you know, Nevada is kind of old school in that sense, is they don't like people coming in and telling them what to do. So raising dollars to continue and offset what the states and the taxpayers are willing to pay for education is critical.
Let's change topics here. Gold today, over $1,700 an ounce. Wow. Your thoughts on that and what that means for Nevada and the mining industry in Nevada?
I think it's great for Nevada in terms of our state financial system. I saw that you said 32% increase in gaming revenues on the Strip, too. So we're certainly not out of the woods, but I think, you know, the financial markets being what they are. In fact, I have a red line right now in terms of my stock update, so I have no idea what's going on in Wall Street. I don't think anybody does. But and I think, you know, this kind of digressing a little bit, but it's a function of just the dysfunction occurring in Congress to enact economic and financial policy. But I think, you know, certainly the price of gold is a plus for Nevada based on our revenue streams. And then you see, you know, some strength in the gaming market. Certainly not out of the woods. This is our 15th consecutive month and where we've seen increased traffic into McCarran Airport down in Las Vegas. So, you know, things are looking better, but you know, with this the uncertainty and instability of the stock market, we'll see if that impacts us down the road.
Bill Lerner of Union Gaming put out a piece about 2 weeks ago, said that we would be at 98% occupancy if some of the properties are either continued like Echelon or opened like Fountain Blue. And there was, apart from on this program, I have not seen any response to that whatsoever. Was there any response to Las Vegas Sands, who you represent?
Well, I don't know about specifically with Bill Lerner's report, but when you look out with the convention center tied to Sands Expo, tied to Venetian and Palazzo, they're well booked up next year and the year after. So they're looking up here in the United States. And you think about Las Vegas Sands, when they got started, 90% of their revenue was in Nevada. Now about close to 90% is outside Nevada. So it's good to see the uptick here where they are based, here with Las Vegas Sands. The rooms being the occupancy rate is certainly helpful because it allows them to pick the average daily rates back up, and they need that. And with the increased traffic coming into Nevada, that's all good news. It's whether they're able to bring those tight budgets and or be able to spend a little bit more loosely in the restaurants, the shows, and everything. And that's really what I think everyone's keeping an eye on. Are they coming with, what kind of a strict budget are they coming on?
Yeah.
But the bookings are up, and that's good.
All right. The spending is down. So.
And then that's where we have to leave it. Thank you very much. Thoughtful discussion. We'll be right back in Nevada Newsmakers after this timeout.
I'm Kate Marshall, and I approve this message.
Mark Amadei sponsored the biggest tax hike in Nevada history. Now, Amadei supports the Ryan plan that ends Medicare as we know it.
Paul Ryan, I like a lot of what he has to say in terms of Medicare. I think that's excellent.
Amadei thinks it's excellent to give seniors a voucher, double their out-of-pocket costs, and give tax breaks to millionaires. Raise our taxes and cut our Medicare? Amadei says,
judge me by what I do.
Okay, Mark, we will.
This calendar of events is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Reno.
Silverland Inn and Suites is the place to stay and play in Virginia City. Coming September 9th through the 11th, we'll have the world-famous 52nd Annual International Camel and Ostrich Races taking place in the beautiful Silverland Arena. This is the West's wildest event, and you don't want to miss it. Tickets go fast, so get yours today. Call 847-4386 for ticket information. That's 847-4386. See you at the races.
When I found out my cancer had spread to my lung, I was worried about what treatment options were left for me. Until my surgeon told me about Reno CyberKnife. The CyberKnife treats tumors and lesions throughout the body. It was non-invasive, fast, and painless. Like cancer surgery without the surgery, I'm so happy to have my life back. Call Reno CyberKnife to learn more.
As always, you can watch Nevada Newsmakers 24 hours a day at NevadaNewsmakers.com. On the next broadcast, the Chancellor of the Nevada System of Higher Education, Dan Klaitch, will be here. We'll see you then.